There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the very best bits of today's show from Monday, November the 4th. Saudi Arabia. The kingdom has fired the starting gun on the world's biggest ever stock market listing. The question is, should you buy shares of the oil giant Saudi Aramco for your personal savings pot? $2 trillion worth of heavy fuel, to be precise. We haven't had the prospectus yet. That's coming out over the weekend. But there's no question at all, this thing is happening. Amin Nasser is the chief executive of Saudi Aramco. And here he explains why they're doing it now.
It will increase our visibility internationally. We are a very strong company. By sharing a lot of information as required by any listed company, there will be a lot of analysts that will review our data and compare it with other listed companies. And we would love to have that type of comparisons, because we are a company that are proud of our results. We have been sharing all these results when we were not listed with our shareholder. With going forward, these comparisons by the various analysts internationally with Aramco, in terms of where do we what is Aramco performance when it comes to technology, when it comes to carbon intensity, when it comes to safety, when it comes to financial performance? All of these things are welcomed, and it's something that will make us very proud.
Amin Nasser, the CEO of Aramco. Question though, would you buy shares in it?
I think there'll be people who are sort of seeing dollar signs flashing up and will say yes. I'm going to go. I think it's pretty 50-50. I think there's a lot of people thinking, well, maybe, you know, how easy is it going to be to get your money out, et cetera, et cetera? How long term do you need to leave that money there?
I think people living in this part of the world will say yes.
We've been speaking to Mohammed Ali Yassin, who's the chief strategy officer at Al Dhabi Capital in Abu Dhabi. He's been crunching the numbers on Gulf companies for 30, 40 years now, veteran investor. We asked him what he made of it as an investment opportunity. And this is what Mohammed told us.
It is really an event when you have a sovereign company like Aramco for the country, which is the biggest producer, or was one of the biggest producer with the biggest reserves and of oil in the world, to have a piece of it. I think the issue here is that the valuations, Richard, is really the main question. And that question has not been answered yet. The announcement yesterday was talking about that this will be announced based on the kind of appetite of the book building process that may come. Even the percentage that's going to be sold, is it 1%, is it 2 or 3? We still don't know. But those are the issues that really are the main deciding factor for any investor, is how much are they valuing the company, and therefore what kind of returns. Is it on the expensive side, as you said in your introductions? Some are talking about a low valuation of 1.2 trillion, the range between 1.2 to 2.2. That's a huge number. We see the sweet spot really and something that is probably within the, let's say, the investor institutional kind of base accepted valuations of maybe in the range of 1.5 trillion or less. And that will also correspond to or match a bit of the kind of the announcement of the 75 billion in terms of dividend to be distributed in 2020, because that will give you the 5% yield. Now, if the valuation goes a bit higher than 1.5, they mentioned there could be some special dividend given next year in order to keep that 5% kind of dividend yield value there. And I think that's a deciding factor for any investor who comes into this IPO, because this is a long-term investment. This is not a short-term flipping kind of investment, in my view. And I think that's why you see all of these kind of dangling gifts for people who will hold the shares, like the retail for 180 days and so on. So it is a big thing. It is going to be the biggest company listed in the world. It's going to be bigger than Apple, bigger than Google at 1.5 trillion. The dividend that's talked about, when you talk about distribution of 75 to 80 billion, those are huge numbers. There are countries' GDPs are not this big, and therefore it is something big. But the valuation has to make sense for all investors.
That's Mohammed Ali Yassin. He's Chief Strategy Officer at Al Dhabi Capital here in the UAE. Going to hear now from Amina Bakker on this story, the Aramco IPO. She's Senior Correspondent with Energy Intelligence Group. Like Mohammed, she's based in the UAE, but spends an awful lot of time in Saudi Arabia. She's in Dhahran at the moment. That is the oil town where the IPO was unveiled yesterday. We spoke to her this morning and we asked Amina, as someone who's been covering Saudi for a decade or more, how big a deal is this IPO announcement?
It's a huge deal. I'm currently in Dhahran. They had the press conference yesterday where Aramco announced their intention to float. And it's really a big deal. And it's been happening for a while now. The preparation works have been ongoing for about 4 years. So from Aramco executives yesterday, I can tell you that it's a sigh of relief. And there's a lot of excitement in the market about the Aramco shares and when they will hit the market. There seems to be a lot of demand locally that I could see. So, it's a huge deal and it's a really historical moment for the kingdom.
That's Amina Bakker talking about the Aramco IPO.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
There's been a good three quarters for the fuel and convenience store businesses of ADNOC Distribution and a profit of just over $1 billion on revenue of $4.3 billion. Pleased to have on the line Mohammed Al-Hashimi, the CEO of ADNOC Distribution. Strong cash generation for your business so far this year. You've opened three new stations in Dubai. How many are planned for next year?
As far as our domestic expansion, as we've stated to our investors, we're in advanced stages of opening up new stations, quite a few of these in Dubai, and the number we've given out so far is 45 by the middle of next year.
Is that 45 in Dubai or in the Emirates?
The majority of the 45 will be in Dubai, but that's not the end of it. By the end of next year, we should have at least a few more in Dubai, because we do intend to saturate the Dubai and the Northern Emirates market.
I mean, fuel volumes for your company are up 4% this year. I mean, the driving population hasn't grown that far. So where's that growth come from?
That's coming from our competition. We've done a good job. We've ran some promotions. We've built out new sites, opened 6 new sites this year, ran promotions that offered a break from our Flex program that resonated nicely with our customers. So we were able to deliver growth both in fuel retail as well as commercial as well.
The commercial side is of interest because one of your stated aims is to expand the convenience store side of your business faster than the fuel side. And that makes sense, I guess, given your tiny margins on fuel. Have you achieved that aim to increase convenience faster than fuel?
Absolutely. So one of our key promises at the time of the IPO is that we will focus on the non-fuel business as well. So two good news coming out of this quarter. One, for the first time since the IPO, volumes have gone up 3.9%, as you pointed out. 6 new stations so far in 2019, 3 of those in Dubai. A lot more stations to open up. And the non-fuel side, which is our non-fuel retail, not the commercial, has grown by over 17% when compared to the same period last year. Basket size in the non-fuel retail has gone up by 6.5%. So the promises that we've made that we will focus on non-fuel retail and our convenience store part of the business, that's starting to materialize.
Mohammed, can we get a little bit more on you about the self-serving? Because we were very interested in your waiver of the 10 dirham fee for having an attendant fill up petrol. Can you tell us a little bit more about the decision to do that?
Sure. So when we launched the IPO, one of the areas of growth that we were considering and then we executed was the program called Flex. Now, this is where we offered a premium service at the pump for a fee, and that was the 10 dirham fee. Now, if customers had choice, if they didn't like to pay the 10 dirham fee, they could self-serve. That was the logic. Now, from a revenue standpoint, this has worked out well. But this, after interacting heavily with our customers over the past quarter since I've joined the company, I've spoken to over 14,000 customers, ran promotions to see how consumers behave when we took the 10 dirham fee away. We recommended, and the board approved, of course, as we announced, this program has ended. I'm glad we tried it. It was worth a good try. But our customers reacted. They told us they didn't like it. They asked for two things. One is to offer service in parity with what our competitors offer, and especially in Dubai and Northern Emirates, but also for a rewards and loyalty program. We've responded to both. We've ended Flex as of yesterday, and as we also stated in our press release on Thursday, We are about to launch a rewards and loyalty program that goes live during the fourth quarter of this year.
Mohammed, I'm being a little bit dim here, but I just do want to clarify. Does that mean you can't fill up your own tank now at ADNOC?
Oh, you absolutely can.
So you haven't ended flex as such in terms of I could still fill up my own tank?
You can still fill up your own tank, or one of our friendly attendants will look after you. Without the fee. The fee, the 10 dirham fee, has ended. But you still have the option to fill up on your own.
Mohammed Al-Hashimi, the COO of ADNOC Distribution, thank you very much.
We also asked the general manager of CAFU, who is, of course, one of ADNOC's competitors. Antonio Al-Asma is GM of CAFU. We asked him whether he felt that self-fueling would ever truly catch on in the UAE.
I cannot comment on why ADNOC has decided eventually to move away from charging the 10 dirhams fees, as they have a very different business model than what we are doing. However, what I can see as a clear trend in the move that they have done is that there is still no appetite in the UAE market to have this kind of service where people are going to leave their car and go fill their own fuel. What it is clear is that the UAE market is a market that values a lot convenience. They value a lot their own time, whereby they want to be able to enter into a service and finish as quickly as possible.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
Starting with Elon Musk. Not if Elon gets his way.
No, Elon has been talking about the fact that he thinks, and I quote, holidays will kill you.
I read this story and I saw the headline and thought, utter nonsense. And then I read it and thought, Elon, you know what? Maybe you've got a point.
He's been speaking to CBS this morning. He's been speaking to Gail King. And he actually, he makes some serious points and some less serious points about holidays. The less serious and the bit that we think is probably just Elon is the fact that he says something absolutely terrible happens every time he takes a holiday.
He's had a really rotten run, hasn't he?
Exactly. He's only taken time off a couple of times in the last 12 years. He says the first time he took a week off, there were a load of rockets that exploded, the Orbital Sciences rocket and then Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic rocket. The second time he took a week off, his own rocket exploded. So he says that he doesn't really do that for just holidays anymore. But then when he went on honeymoon, he firstly ended up basically being fired, X.com, when he was on a plane with his wife the first time he tried to take a honeymoon, September 2000. He was delivered a letter of no confidence from the board, which ousted him as CEO. And then they tried to take a honeymoon again because he obviously had to fly right back and sort that out. And then he got malaria. So he basically just says, I've given up, vacations will kill you. On a more serious note, in more in line with his sleeping on the factory floor, working 100 hours a week, which we know about and which he's been taken to task for by Arianna Huffington, author of Thrive, she of the Huffington Post. You remember she wrote that open letter saying, Elon, you need to sleep more. Come on, you're a genius, but you're no good to anyone if you're exhausted. And he basically said that he doesn't believe that the CEO should be off on vacation whilst other people are basically working their socks off.
I'm with Arianna Huffington, not with Elon on this. Malcolm, you had the day off yesterday. Did you nearly die or do you feel refreshed?
Yeah, I sat listening to you guys all day and just worrying about, you know, what it could do to the whole show, me not being there. No, of course I didn't. Somebody who can't let go, that doesn't bode well for them personally in later life, for a start. And I can understand why he's busy. He's got so many things on his plate. He really does. But put more people you trust in place to do it for you.
So the kangaroo court is not with Elon on this one.
No.
We think we should take our holidays.
Take your holidays.
Your newsmaker, Malcolm, is the Delhi smog.
Yeah,
the residents of Delhi are not likely to get a respite from pollution anytime soon. The air quality levels in Delhi deteriorated further today and continue to remain in the severe category. The air quality level in the Delhi NCR region is at 447, while on Saturday it was at 402.
Yeah, and the third edition of the odd-even road rationing kicks in today as Delhi grapples with those emergency levels of pollution. Part of the scheme, from today, only odd-numbered private cars are going to drive on the odd dates, and those with even number plates will apply on even days. So Monday, Day number one will be the odd numbers, and it's evens tomorrow, etc., etc. So starting today, only private cars having registration numbers ending with 02468 will be allowed on the roads. I've done that in Korea, because just before the Olympics in 88, Seoul did exactly that. It worked quite well, actually. It kept a lot of people off the road. But Delhi, desperately trying to keep people in. People with CNG, diesel cars, well, CNG anyway, will be allowed to go. And two-wheelers will still be allowed to go. And any car with a woman driver will be allowed in. And any cars full of women will be allowed in. So it's not everybody. They expect it's going to take about 1.2, 1.3 million cars off the road. But pollution yesterday reaching its worst levels so far this year. 400 times the amount that's deemed healthy.
Oh my, it looked awful.
It does. I mean, and there were 30 flights that were redirected away from Delhi Airport. When the pollution is so bad that you can't see through it to land a plane, it's got to be bad, hasn't it? The air quality index measuring over 900, and that far exceeds the level of 25 deemed safe by the WHO. So 900 against the sort of WHO, the World Health Organization, recommended limit of 25.
Is this the, it's not Diwali fireworks, is it the stubble burning from some of the farmers in outlying areas?
Yeah, it's the annual tradition in Delhi at this time of year, a toxic mixture of smoke from celebration firecrackers. It's the crop stubble being burnt by farmers, and it's also a cold shift in temperatures, locking in the fumes. So it's a number of things, really, but you're right, it's crops and it's crops and fireworks that have created the smog, and it's the cold air that's trapping it there.
It looks pretty grim. My newsmaker is Mubarak Al-Mansouri. He's the central bank governor of the UAE. We've mentioned him briefly earlier on. I was down yesterday in Abu Dhabi at the Middle East Banking Forum, and he was the star turn there. He was kind of the headline act in music festival terms. And he spoke about a bunch of stuff. And one of the things he spoke about was interest rates, which we know have come down quite sharply over the past year or so. Three interest rate cuts in the United States. We all always follow in lockstep here because our currency is pegged to the US dollar. But he says it's a double-edged sword. Now, the good news is, he says, I think it's good for the UAE economy. He said, if we have interest rate cuts, it is positive for the economy of the UAE because it stimulates investment and it stimulates consumer spending. However, he says the downside is a global asset price bubble, and that's not good for anyone. When interest rates are very, very low, people have to buy riskier assets to get any kind of return, whether that's stocks, whether it's real estate, whatever it may be, and that can lead to an asset price bubble. We saw on Friday the US stock market record high, and we've seen bubbles in other asset prices as well. So that's the downside. The third thing he mentioned, though, and he weighed in to the debate from last week between Hussein Sejwani, the chairman of DMAC, and Mohammed Alabbar.
It's a brave place to wade into.
The chairman of MR Properties. Well, the guys from CNBC were interviewing him on stage, so it wasn't a speech. He kind of had no choice. And unsurprisingly, being a central banker, he was very political and democratic about it and kind of hedged his bets. But asked about the worries prompted by DMAC chairman Hussein Sejwani, he said, I would tend to disagree with Hussein Sejwani's comment that we need to stop building for 18 months or so. He says, I think we've learned the lessons. This is Mubarak Al-Mansouri from 2008. Banks have learned their lessons. They've been prudent in extending loans to the real estate sector. He says, now, if you look at some of the offers they have now, it's attractive. He says the risk level has been reduced. Now, this is for mortgages. So there's two things here. One is banks lending to DMAC or big construction firm. The other is banks lending to Brandy and Malcolm Richard. So on the mortgage thing, he says, if you look at some of the offers now, they're very attractive. The risk level has been reduced. You're not buying at the peak as an end user. You're buying at the low end. But he did say, he did finish off by saying, I do think, yes, we need to look at the supply issue in the real estate market. He says, yes, that is something that we do need to look at and we do need to consider. So diplomatic responses from Mubarak Al-Mansouri yesterday, but commenting on the real estate situation.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We've got a big UN gathering underway in Abu Dhabi, the UN Industrial Development Organization's General conference. It's already seen the UAE Energy Minister, Sahail Al-Mazrui, named its president. We are joined on the line now by someone very big in terms of making things here in the UAE, the CEO of the aerospace company Strata Manufacturing, Ismail Abdullah. Ismail, it's lovely to speak to you. Thanks very much for joining us. And you guys are taking a very active role in this UNIDO meeting, this UN meeting. Why is it such a big deal that it's being held here?
I think it's a very important deal for us. And let me start by thanking you for having me on the show. So from Strata's perspective, we are actually sponsoring the exhibition related to women empowerment, especially in the industrial arena. Strata is a shining example when it comes to women empowerment. Today, 53 of our total workforce are actually ladies. And we were able to do this over the past 10 years. Ladies, are working as technicians, as engineers, and also part of the leadership team. What we want to do is we want to project this shining example to the world that this can happen.
Yes, because as you say there, you're sponsoring the Gender Hub, which is going to have a lot of discussions about how to get more women into manufacturing. How do you get more women into manufacturing?
I think it started with the basic rules that we have laid up the foundation for. So a decade ago, when we started our journey in aerostructure, we had a vision. Our vision was to create a partner of choice for aircraft manufacturers, the likes of Airbus, Boeing, Leonardo, Pilatus, and the list goes on. We knew that this was a challenging task, so we have developed a number of roadmaps to support us along this journey. A technology roadmap which specified what are the capabilities that we needed to build to meet and align with our partners' requirements and address some of the gaps that we had in the supply chain. Other roadmaps were to do with people development and talent acquisition. It was very important for us as we early understood the importance of having a sustainable pipeline of talented individuals ready to join our activities. And we've teamed up with the best in the world. We've teamed up with Airbus, we've teamed up with Boeing, we've teamed up with Lockheed Martin, as well as UAE University to develop dedicated training programs for technicians as well as engineers. Fast forward, I strongly believe that we were able to break a lot of stereotypes, both on the national level as well as on the international level. You know, having women working in an industry that is male-dominated, what we started with were two basic rules, gender neutral and colorblind.
So wiping out discrimination there. You mentioned Boeing, Ismail. I'm going to pivot slightly. I'm going to move on to a slightly different topic because Boeing, of course, has been in the news, not just this week, for the last couple of months to do with the 737 MAX. They're one of your partners. The 737 MAX, of course, nothing to do with Strata. But Boeing's financial future must be something that you are looking at, given the fact that you are they're one of your clients or you're one of their manufacturers. Is this something you're discussing internally, what that partnership might look like going forward?
Actually, Boeing has been a true partner for Strata from day one. So we've been working with Boeing over the past 7 years. Today, we manufacture for Boeing on the 777 program, the 787 program, as well as before the end of the year, we will be shipping parts on their newest commercial aircraft, which is the 777X. Moreover, by the end of the year, we will be finalizing a new extension to Strata's facility here in Al Ain. We've named it Strata Plus. And Strata Plus is going to host the largest production line that we've ever manufactured. And there is going to be the full vertical fin for the 787 program. And today, this is the largest technology transfer from a Boeing facility to anywhere outside the US, and it is actually to the UAE. We bank a lot on Boeing, and this partnership will grow from strength to more strength in the future.
Ismail Abdullah, CEO of the aerospace company Strata Manufacturing, we appreciate your time.
That is it for the bite-sized business breakfast. We are, of course, back tomorrow morning from 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.